You're listening to a WOSU Public Media podcast. Everything you hear is funded by listeners like you. Become a member of WOSU Public Media today and support digital content like Snollygoster and the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast. Make a gift at WOSU.org.
Good morning and welcome to today's edition of All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. If you love to read, if you want some recommendations, if you want to know the latest quick picks, and if you want to meet a great author, this is the show for you. Later in the broadcast, we will be joined by Hanif Abdurraqib, who is a Columbus-based writer, social commentator, poet, whose work has taken him international. His new book is called A Little Devil in America, Notes in Praise of Black Performance. He will join us later in the broadcast. For now, we have two great performers who are all about books. They are Chris Hickey, who was the manager of youth services at the Whetstone branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, and Cassie Rose, who was WOSU's book critic. Her indispensable blog for anyone who loves to read is thelongestchapter.com. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
And welcome, Cassie Rose.
Good morning.
I'm in heaven because I get to look at you both, which is great. The bad side is you get to look at me since we're talking via Zoom right now. But let's begin with some recommendations. Cassie Rose, you recommended last time we were together a book called Sergeant Salinger, which was a piece of fiction based on the early Army years of J.D. Salinger, the writer. I read it. Here's my advice, everybody. If Cassie Rose tells you to read the book, because it was a great book. So, Cassie Rose, let's begin with you and see what recommendations you have for us.
Well, thank you, Christopher. And I'm glad you liked the Salinger book. I thought it was a terrific book also. I'm going to start today with a novel called Like a Sword Wound by Amit Altan. It is the first book in a quartet about the downfall of the Ottoman Empire. And I find it just fascinating. It's a novel, and it's not the characters that draw you in or that are drawing me in as much as that this situation of what all the events that he's bringing together that you can see are the small things that are going to bring down the Ottoman Empire. And it's late 19th century, early 20th century is at least in this book. And it's themes of betrayal, conspiracy, and lust also, which opens the book. Surprisingly, a holy man marries a beautiful woman, and he feels so guilty about his feelings for her that he stops talking with her, which of course ends the marriage. And then she marries the son of the doctor of the Sultan. So you can see as I'm going here, there are all these little pieces that start out and introduce us to characters. And he too is smitten with her. And then we get into the story of a military man who everybody is plotting against. And then there's the Sultan who is so scared of everyone that he has spies and detectives out throughout Istanbul. And you get the feeling as you're reading this, and you can see all these things that are bringing the downfall of this huge empire. Now, the Sultan was elected to bring in a constitutional monarchy. That's what he promised, but he didn't do that. Anyway, I bring this up because it is, if you are looking for a book that is going to be fascinating, that you will look forward to every night to read, and you want to get into a series, this might be that book for you and that series for you. And one more thing about it, and I don't know why I feel the need to bring this up, but it just keeps coming to mind. If you loved the book Memoirs of Hadrian, it was published in the 1950s. Best-selling classic, Marguerite Yourcenar, then you're going to love this book. And it's because it has the same tone and texture. And that book was about the Emperor Hadrian and his life and death. And I know it was hugely popular. So that's why I bring it up and sort of compare it to this book, too.
You say it's about the fall of the Ottoman Empire. And when you said that initially, because I'm ignorant, I'm thinking, oh, it took place 1,000 years ago. But no, indeed, it took place maybe 100 years ago in far more recent memory.
Yes, and interesting, the author, who is a very well-known Turkish author, is currently in jail. He has a life sentence. He was put in jail in 2016 under false accusations. And I believe I read somewhere that 50 Nobel laureates wrote in protest to the government. So he's also a bit of an activist that has been writing and publishing and revealing about what is going on in current day Turkey.
Give us the title, Cassie, one more time.
It's called Like a Sword Wound by Ahmet Altan, A-L-T-A-N.
I'm writing it down while you talk to us. Thank you, Cassie Rose, for that. That sounds like one of these books you can just dig into and live in for a while. And I'm interested, you said it's reading like the beginning of a series, possibly.
Yes, and I also, and Chris might be able to help with this, I did not find it in the library system, although the second book is that just came out in February is in the library system. So I'm thinking that if someone wants it, they could talk to their librarian and see if they could help get it for them.
Yes, we could potentially get it through OhioLINK or Search Ohio, or if people want it, we could buy it. So I've written it down and I'm going to share that with our collection people.
Thank you, Chris Hickey. Thank you, Cassie Rose. We're going to be talking more books on today's edition of All Sides Weekend Books. Chris Hickey is coming to us from the Clintonville branch. I live there. Why did it just Whetstone branch of the Whetstone. Columbus Metropolitan Library? The libraries are open, yes, for browsing.
Yes, the libraries are open for browsing. So we have what's called limited public access. And basically what that means is we just have a count of how many people are in the building. We only let so many people in at a time so that when you are browsing, you can do it with space and you can feel more comfortable doing that. We also have computer use and faxing and copying and all of those services as well.
All of the many resources are available.
Yes.
Okay. Chris Hickey, I always ask you to bring us some quick picks, which are the hot books, the hot titles in the library, which fly off the shelves. But you have a display in every branch and if you luck out, they may be sitting there for you. So how about some quick picks for us to recommend?
So a big one that just came out recently is Kazuo Ishiguro's Clara and the Sun. So this is his latest novel. And I was reading an article about him and where he was referred to as the master of the micro setting. So think about Remains of the Day was set in the manor house. Never Let Me Go was in the school. And in this book, the micro setting is the perspective of an artificial being, an artificial intelligence. Her name is Clara and she's an artificial friend. So she's like not a toy so much as a companion. It's people buy these creatures for their children.
Is it a robot?
It's a robot.
Okay.
That looks very human. So it's an artificial intelligent robot that can walk and talk. So we start out with Clara in the store and her observations of humanity. So the whole book is from her perspective. So we're only getting her piece of the story and what she believes to be true. So she's observing human behavior from the window, the display window of the store when she meets a girl named Josie. Josie does end up purchasing her and bringing her home. And Clara has this interesting relationship with the sun. So she calls it her nourishment from the sun. So she, is solar powered. But she observes something when she's in the window she observes a man who she thinks is dead, who's in a doorway. And then the sun's rays hit him and then he's alive again. So she thinks that the sun has almost godlike powers that can bring people back, can save people. So the girl that she lives with, Josie, has health problems. And we're not exactly sure why, but it may have something to do with the fact that she is a child known as lifted. So parents are genetically modifying their children to make them special. So yeah, it's Kazuo Ishiguro. So this book goes to dark places. So
but so many layers, very multi-layered.
This is very multi-layered. And again, you're only seeing it from this AI's perspective. So it's limited, but you can kind of read into maybe this is what's happening. It's fascinating. And, you know, with all the books that I've read by him, I'm still thinking about it. I'm telling my friends, read it, because I want to discuss it with somebody. And it's, he got this idea. This was a story that he would tell his daughter when she was younger. And so when he told her, I'm going to write this as a children's book, she said, you can't do that. You're going to traumatize them. So that's an adult book. But yes, that's how it started. He wanted to write a children's book, but it is much too dark.
Kazuo Ishiguro is a British writer who's gotten a lot of coverage in recent. Didn't he win the Nobel Prize?
He did. And he's won the Booker Prize. And he's
The Remains of the Day. Anything. He's a little bit, sometimes time suspends when you read his books, but they are fascinating and they are worth the reading. Certainly his books are. So I am on the list. I think I'm number 375 on the library list for the reserves, but I'm going to walk in. Someday it's going to be there in the quick pick aisle and I'll be able to pick it up. Again, Clara and the Sun is the name of the novel, and it's about Clara. Clara is a creation
of artificial intelligence.
She's a robot. Okay. But I guess we get to call her she. She's got a name, so why not?
Yeah, they are. They're male artificial friends and they're female artificial friends.
And God help us, we may not be far away anyway from what's
right. Yes. He does. Yeah, it is very. Yeah. And there's another book I'm just going to tease ahead that is going to talk about genetic in reality. So
all right. Cassie Rose, top that. Artificial intelligence, robots keeping us company.
Yeah, gee, I don't think I can. Although I do have a great mystery book that is very suspenseful. And it's called Exit by Belinda Bauer. She is best known for a book called Snap that was long listed for the Man Booker Prize, which to me was surprising because you don't often see mysteries listed for the Booker. This book is one, it is suspenseful, but it's two, it's also a little humorous too, because of the protagonist, 75-year-old man named Felix Pink. So Mr. Pink is what's called an exiteer, and he assists the terminally ill who decide to take their life. So he doesn't facilitate, this organization doesn't, and it's in Britain, which I think that this is, it may be legal in Britain in terms of you can't facilitate, but you can sit beside, offer moral support and all of that. Well, anyway, the intrigue is that he goes into a house that's empty, the family is gone, he goes up to the room, all the equipment is there that is needed, he sits down, and when he leaves, he hears another noise in the house and he realizes the wrong person died. And Felix is so true to character. And that's what makes this kind of funny in a way sometimes. His assistant leaves, he tells her to get out. And then he sits and waits for the police to come because he knows the police are going to come. And he decides he's just gonna go to jail. And then he realizes that his dog Mabel does not have anyone to take care of her. And so he also flees. The way that Bauer writes this is you really do find Felix Pink to be endearing, as well as you get intrigued by the mystery of what happened. It's very many layered, lots of characters, and you really don't know until you get towards the end. It's very surprising.
That sounds like a great read.
It is. It's a perfect read.
And in our next segment, I'm going to ask you both just for some great reads that you can just sort of, I can't wait to get that book. I'm going to call in sick today and read this book. I mean, that's what I mean by a great read. I'm going to look forward to that with you. We are going to take a break and come back with more talk with Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. We're going to ask Cassie about the blog too. And Chris Hickey from the Whetstone branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, who will be back with more quick picks. And later in the broadcast, Hanif Abdurraqib. Don't go away. We are back with All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to have Cassie Rose here, who is WOSU's book critic, and Chris Hickey from the Whetstone branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library. I was asking you both to think about great reads. I don't want to do anything else but read this book. I have to read this book, and I don't want it to end. Chris Hickey, do you have one like that as a quick pick or a favorite to talk to us about?
Oh, here's a quick pick, and I haven't read it yet, but I very much want to, and it is called Codebreaker by Walter Isaacson. So it is a nonfiction, it is a biography, but it reads like a detective novel. So as I mentioned before about the Kazuo Ishiguro book and genetically enhanced children, this book is about a famous geneticist. So this is the story of Jennifer Doudna, and she's a Nobel Prize-winning scientist. And she and her colleagues created a tool called CRISPR that edits DNA. So it's pretty fascinating. So if you've read Clara and the Sun and you want to know more about that science, this is one. And DNA is just fascinating, anyways. So it's called Codebreaker: Jennifer Doudna, the Future of the Human Race.
Isaacson's book immediately part of that, I think, was his bio of Da Vinci, which was phenomenal.
Yes.
So if it's that is something you won't be able to put down. No question.
His books are very engrossing. He also wrote one about Steve Jobs.
Right, exactly.
So definitely, right. It's a deep dive into these fascinating people. And so, you know, they're trying to cure diseases and have healthier babies, but also the same stuff, you know, could you prevent depression? Could you genetically alter children to be stronger and smarter? There's a lot of, you know, moral questions with that. So it's a fascinating deep dive. And for people who, there's that new show on Netflix called The One. I binge watched that. It was about using genetics to find your one true love, which is also based on a book by John Mars. So if people like that kind of thing, this book is going to be good.
That could be scary, but the book sounds wonderful. Yeah. I look forward to the book. Cassie Rose, how about you?
I'm also going to recommend a book that I haven't read, but I'm looking forward to. It's coming out end of April, I think, or May. And I wrote about it on my blog. And it's called Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead. And I just have a feeling that it is going to be one of those books you get so involved in and you do not want to do anything else, because it's about an aviatrix, a female aviator in the 20th century, early 20th century, who attempts to circumnavigate the globe and gets lost. And then a parallel story about a film actress who portrays the aviatrix in a modern Hollywood movie. And it's 600 plus pages, which that's what tells me I think that this is going to be one of those engrossing great sagas. And just reading about it, I'm very excited about it and think that that's going to be the book that you, when the weather warms up, you're just going to want to sit on your patio and just read the book and have everybody leave you alone.
Perfect. That's exactly my definition of what I was looking for. Thank you. Remind us again of the title and the author.
It's called Great Circle, and it's by Maggie Shipstead.
Look forward to that in a few weeks coming out. Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
TheLongestChapter.com is your blog. What's current on your blog?
Well, this is one of the books that I have on it, and I wrote about five novels that are coming out in April and May that I find to be very exciting. I'm excited about them. They're all by established authors. For example, another one is Hummingbird Salamander by Jeff Vandermeer. And Vandermeer wrote the Southern Reach trilogy. A lot of people might remember that also because of the first book, Annihilation, became a movie. I could not put Annihilation down. I was so riveted by it. And so this book, and I liked the other two in the trilogy, but that one and I'm not a fantasy sci-fi person, but I could not put that book down. This one, Hummingbird Salamander, I think is going to be another page turner. And I think Netflix has also optioned it. So that book is on the blog, as well as a new book by Francisco Goldman, who is one of my very favorite authors. He's a Guatemalan American. So you can read more about all those books.
The longestchapter.com is Cassie Rose's blog, not to be missed. Chris Hickey at the Whetstone Library, I want to make the point that, as people know, but it bears repeating, you have all kinds of materials that circulate. You have books, you have ebooks, you have audiobooks, you have video, you have music. I don't know what you don't have, but every genre is represented. What are you noticing that's really flying off the shelves? Anything specific or any genre that's really running around?
You know what? I think a lot of everything is flying off the shelves right now. You know what? Our shelves were so packed when we were just in curbside, and now people are just coming in, what I'm seeing at Whetstone, and just taking lots of everything. I'm seeing lots of books going out in people's hands. So I would say maybe print books, but our ebook circulation is also very high. So that became extra popular during the closure, and people just keep checking them out. They like it. It's working for them.
You posted a photograph, I think you took the day of the shutdown, just over a year and a week ago maybe, when you knew you were going home and you didn't know when you were coming back. And you took a picture of the shelves at Whetstone that were empty. It looked like the building was being shut down forever and moved away, because apparently, and I'm sure I was among the people that ran in a panic and cleaned out the library. Did that happen? Was there a run on the library after over like 1 or 2 days?
There was. So we made the announcement that Friday. It was March 13th, Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And after the announcement came, we were packed. We were like Costco. We had lines to check out. We were checking people out. We were overriding, you know, limits, just like, check out. And they were pretty decimated. We didn't have time to refill displays. So they were empty very quickly, and people took armloads. We didn't know when we were coming back. We didn't even have time to process it, because we were just, you know, trying to help everyone get what they needed
before
we closed
our
doors that day. But it was just a very surreal experience. And people checked out a lot of stuff.
How long, Whetstone is very highly trafficked. I venture to guess that it's one of the most highly trafficked branches in the system. How long was it initially, was the building locked? Was it a couple of months?
So it was March, and I believe it was the end of May.
Wow.
When we started doing the curbside.
About 10 weeks.
Mid-May, maybe it was, because we had teams come back in and clean up and, you know, shelve and kind of get it ready so we could find things again. But I think it was a while. And none of us ever thought it would be that long.
But it's a year later, and the materials are available, including quick picks. And I'd like to ask you for another quick pick recommendation.
Yes. So this one is, I think most months I will share a book. If you've read Stamped, here's the next book you need to read, Stamped by Jason Reynolds, or How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi. This one is called The Sum of Us, What Racism Costs Everyone and How We Can Prosper Together. And this is a first book by economist Heather McGee. And so she looks at systemic racism from an economic perspective. She worked for the think tank Demos. So she's done lots of research in this area. And what she's able to do in this book is draw a line from the past directly to how things are today and why things are the way they are today. So she has chapters on various aspects. There's a chapter on college tuition. There's a chapter, I'm reading this book currently, and I just finished the chapter on predatory lending that was particularly upsetting. And one of the chapters that gets talked about a lot when you hear about her book is the investment in public good. So she uses the public pool as an illustration. So in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, communities across the country were building these beautiful resort-like pools in all kinds of towns. And it was seen as, you know, like an embodiment of the leisure-filled American dream. And so in the 1950s, you know, people, you know, when people of color are saying, you know, I pay my taxes too, why can't I use this pool? Instead of allowing them to use the pools, they filled them in. And so there are many communities across the country that had these beautiful, like jewels of the community, these pools, don't have any pools. And so she uses that kind of as an illustration throughout the book as part of the theme. And it's a fascinating read.
It's called The Sum of Us.
It is called The Sum of Us.
Right. Is that, and that's a quick pick?
That is a quick pick. It just came out in February. So the whole list was so long that we added that as a quick pick.
I'm imagining that it's also flying out of the place as well. So we
very much
look forward to the
long hold list for that.
Now, remind us as well, just talking about quick picks, exactly what that means if you're visiting the library, you walk by a display that says quick picks. How is it working? How does that work?
So how it works, this might be, you know, maybe you have a book that you're number 400 on the hold list. Every Tuesday we have new ones. So you can walk into any of our buildings, look at the display, and the book that you have on hold might be there. And then you can just check it out and not have to wait as long as you were going to wait.
So it's just
a surprise and delight kind of.
So you gotta show up and be proactive. And if you
yes.
are, you could luck out. I've lucked out a few times. It works. The system works beautifully.
Oh, good.
Cassie Rose, I wanted to ask you. You do a lot of speaking in the area, and you are part of panels, and you do a lot of guesting in the community on book and reading related topics. So you probably have your ear to the ground in terms of local booksellers and local book business. How is it going on in these pandemic days? I mean, depending on who you ask, it's getting better. I don't know, but how is the book business? How is it for readers during this pandemic?
What I'm hearing is that indeed it is better and getting better. I hear a lot of good news from Prologue Bookshop simply by following them on social media. Mm-hmm. Also how they have opened their store back up again. And the owner has been saying over the past several months, you know, thanking all the people who have been buying the books and helping him to sustain his business. So it sounds like he's doing very well. I've also been watching Gramercy and been really fascinated by how they have changed and blossomed into the social media context with all of their Zoom presentations, and as well as a lot of the emails that are coming out for, you know, New Release Tuesday. And so I think that they also are growing into this new way of bookselling.
Linda Cass is a very savvy business person who runs Gramercy Books. Yeah, smart.
Yes. And so I think the pandemic has forced the book industry or the booksellers into this new space that going forward is just going to augment and bring in even more business and spread their wealth of good books further. So I think it's changing them in a very good way and force them to do things that normally they probably wouldn't have done because they didn't have to. And one of them is the Zoom. I saw Linda Cass had pulled in, and I don't remember who it was, but it was an author who was maybe in New York, and she partnered with a bookseller in Florida. So it was Gramercy and this Florida bookseller and to do a Zoom presentation.
I think the Zoom author talks are here to stay even when the stores are wide open. I think it's a great new way to really get everybody participant in talking with and listening to their favorite author on a visit.
Absolutely. And I know for one, I'm loving it because I'm getting to hear all sorts of authors all over the United States that normally I wouldn't have been able to attend. So that's really been, it's opened up just a lot for readers and for book critics like me.
And Chris Hickey, we already know that even though you have to limit the traffic into the libraries these days, the doors are open. And people are coming in and materials are going out. So our readers, our consumers are getting some satisfaction there, and the interest has not changed because of the pandemic. People want to read. People want to look at videos. People want to listen to music, et cetera. So there's more work and more opportunities to be had. And I think as well, the new technology is just making everything expanding. We have a couple of minutes until our next break when Hanif Abdurraqib joins us to talk about his new book. He is an author who lives in Central Ohio, but he writes and travels internationally, or probably will once we can, once the restrictions are lifted. But Cassie, I wanted to ask you for one more recommendation before we go to break.
I'm going to recommend a memoir called The Last Children of Mill Creek by Vivian Gibson. Mill Creek was a neighborhood in urban or downtown St. Louis that in the 1950s was raised to make room for a highway to the white suburbs. And it demolished a very vibrant urban Black neighborhood, and which was Vivian Gibson's childhood neighborhood. And St. Louis labeled it a slum, doing air quotes here, as their excuse and for urban renewal. When you read this memoir, though, it is an enchanting childhood. And what she writes about her parents and her seven siblings is, it's just the most charming and enchanting and involving kind of memoir because of the details that she includes too. And it was a happy family, which you rarely don't get, you rarely get that in Black memoirs. Not that they weren't happy families, but most of it has to do with, like, perhaps Richard Wright's Black Boy or the poverty. And she grew up in poverty. They did not have a furnace. They didn't have hot water. And in three rooms, there were 10 people. But the love in that family, the joy they had in life, her memories, and what she takes us through, it's just really a wonderful memoir. And it's published by Belt Publishing, which is a publishing company in Cleveland. Similar, I would say, to, not in terms of what they publish, but similar in size and what they do to $2 Radio.
$2 Radio, which is a wonderful local, and he's taking off. Speaking of the pandemic, remind us of $2 Radio, Cassie Rose.
It's a publishing company and a bookstore and cafe, and that is run by Eric and Eliza Obanoff. They publish very distinctive books and bring out a lot of the authors. They become the publishers, the first publishers of authors that go on to be, that the big houses then grab up.
Right.
I've just read about a memoir that's coming out from an author that they had started. I forget his name. But Hanif also, I believe, began with $2 Radio, which is his first collection of essays.
Well, we'll ask him that in just a moment. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Book. We're going to take a quick break. Come back with Cassie Rose and Chris Hickey and Hanif Abdurraqib. Don't go away. We are back. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books. We've been talking with Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. And Chris Hickey is the, I'm getting this right, the Youth Services Manager at the Whetstone Branch of the Columbus Library, who brings us quick picks and more and all news of the library. It is my special pleasure to welcome back to the show after too long Hanif Abdurraqib, a locally based writer whose career is international. Some of his previous titles include They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us and The Crown Ain't Worth Much. His new collection, which goes on sale at the end of this month, is called Notes in Praise of Black Performance, A Little Devil in America. Hanif, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me again. It's good to be here.
One of the things that I love in this collection is that you have three or four different essays with variations on the same title, On Times I Have Forced Myself to Dance, and then at the end, On Times I Have Forced Myself Not to Dance. This is a collection of essays and observation and social commentary. Tell us, Hanif, because it's been a while since we've talked and so much has happened, what is the world today to you as reflected in your writing?
You know, I think as I've gotten older and as I've written more, I've tried to detach my writing from a response to the world as it moves in real time, because I think that otherwise, you know, I would be perhaps as cynical as some critics think I am in the first place. But you know, I think that I'm consistently looking for cause for emotional and physical propulsion. And I, you know, the world on its face doesn't really provide that for me. So I think that when I sink into my obsessions and when I sink into my excitements in the work, I find it there instead, and then take that excitement out into the world for as long as my battery will hold up.
When I read your material, and I mean this as a compliment, as a help, I feel like you're teaching me. You're not preaching to me, and you're not yelling at me, but you're teaching me. And as somebody who needs to be taught some things, I get a great deal out of about what you're writing. One of the essays in this new collection, which is an extended one, is called 16 Ways at Looking at Blackface. Yeah. And you do a real historical overview, and you make it personal as well. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, you know, I wanted to write that piece in fragments because I was realizing as I was drafting it that I was actually writing 16 different interconnected essays. And I'm always up for a challenge, which is why I think formal diversions or formal shifts in my work are appealing to me, because it was more interesting for me to ask, how can I make these vignettes kind of braided together in a way that feels as though they're kind of making an arc towards a singular point, but not hammering someone over the head with the same thing over and over and over again. And so I really took that approach of 16 different ways of assessing this history and how this history has fit into my life and the lives before mine and will undoubtedly fit into the lives that come after mine. But I really wanted to take some time with it and, you know, make it feel as though a reader was moving through various different landscapes that were all as uncertain as I was when I took the piece on. I think that's how I'm really unafraid of having uncertainty at the forefront of my work. You know, I think maybe that's why with any luck, I don't feel like I'm teaching or preaching. I don't feel like I'm preaching or kind of yelling at people. I think I'm too uncertain to preach to anyone, even myself.
But one of the things too, if I often feel like you give us questions we can ask rather than answers when one reads some of your stuff. I mean, it is very expanding in that way. I need to also emphasize you're a very entertaining writer. You're very dispassionate. You don't get in your own way as a writer, which you can't say that for every writer out there. One of the other pieces is a great epilogue for Aretha.
Oh, yeah. You know, what's funny. I wrote before the epilogue for Aretha is the piece about Aretha's funeral. Mm-hmm. And I had that piece kind of done and ready and in the book. And then I went to go see Amazing Grace, which I saw in theaters like four times. And the experience of that and seeing that and being so moved by that sent me kind of sprinting back to the page. And I wrote the epilogue. And during the editing process, there was kind of a question of, well, can I have two pieces on Aretha back to back? And, you know, my whole idea was, well, why not? You know, if the idea is that we're kind of chasing this feeling of ecstasy and excitement through the lens of this one person who I love a great deal, it seems like that is actually, you know, if the book is truly to be a book of celebration, then that actually feels what the book is speaking for or speaking towards.
That film was a documentary with the young Aretha, and I believe her father's church. Is that right? And is centered on gospel music.
Yeah. It's a documentary where she sings at a church in Southern Los Angeles for two nights, and it's really stunning. If people haven't seen it, I would recommend it. I've seen it now five times. I watched it kind of in the summer during the pandemic, but you know, it's brilliant.
How has the pandemic affected you as a writer?
I mean, honestly, it's the only way I think the pandemic has been good for me has been in how it's affected me as a writer. I'm home more. I think, you know, folks who know me here a bit in Columbus, I was gone for most of 2019 and early 2020.
Yeah, I was shocked you were available to come on the show today because you used to be very, very hard to pin down because you were on the road so much.
Yeah. No, I'm home now. And I think this is, for me, what feels like a new normal, ideally. You know, you know, the way I was traveling in 2019 and early 2020 wasn't sustainable in the first place. But I've also, you know, I'm much more settled in Columbus now. I bought a house. I am doing like the homeowner renovation things and all of this and whatnot. And so, you know, I'm kind of here and want to be here. And my eagerness to be here is at an all-time high. But, you know, because of that, I've settled into some comfortable routines that have made writing a bit more easy to return to. And so that's been exciting.
You grew up in Columbus, am I correct?
Yeah, I grew up on the east side.
Right. You said, did you grow up in Bexley? Were there really two Bexleys?
Well, yeah. I mean, I grew up not in Bexley, but on what some would consider the border of Bexley.
And did living in Central Ohio, did growing up specifically in Central Ohio, did it and does it still inform your writing?
I think in that it informs my personhood, so it does inform my writing. I think it informs, you know, I've been imbued with a real sense of wonder and a broad imagination because I spent so much of my time growing up immersed in narratives that did not center particularly Black Midwesterners. You know, I came up in the 90s where so much of the Black narratives on screen and in books were... Well, not all in books. I read Toni Morrison, you know, I read Jackie Woodson, but a lot of on-screen stuff was centered on coastal Black narratives. And so because of that, I had to really curate an imagination that made my Black Midwestern living and the Black Midwestern living I was immersed in a worthwhile lived experience. And so, you know, there are ways that I think I have a type of broad and eager imagination that was fostered here that I think is at its best when I can write in the presence of this city that I love a great deal.
Hanif's new book is called A Little Devil in America, Notes in Praise of Black Performance. And what he does as you read this book is he takes you by the hand and lets you join in on his journey. And you are looking at things and places you may recognize if you've lived in Central Ohio for a while through a different prism, in which case you get to learn something and be entertained at the same time. The book begins to go on sale at the end of this month, so get in line. I'm sure it'll be a big hit at the Columbus Metropolitan Library. I want to just throw it open to Chris Hickey, who is from the Whetstone branch of the Columbus Library, and Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, and sort of stop hogging the conversation and bring any one of you into it to talk with Hanif.
Well, Hanif is going to be joining us in June, on June 13th, for an author visit, and we are very much looking forward to that.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. I'm really excited. And, you know, I mean, I've talked about this before. I've talked about it a great deal. The Columbus Library has been really important to me. Like, when I was growing up, the Livingston branch opened up when I was the kid, and that really changed my experience of reading and writing and loving books.
So when did you spend a lot of time at the Livingston branch?
Yeah. I mean, it came around when I was like, I want to say 10 or 11. And so, you know, I came up in a household where reading was big, but, you know, access to books was somewhat limited. And so the Livingston branch coming along was a really big deal for me.
That's great.
Cassie.
I was just going to say, you know, one of the essays that sticks with me, it was not in one of your books, but, and I think it was published in the New Yorker, and it was about the monuments that come down. And I think you wrote it about the Columbus, Christopher Columbus Monument, but it's the, how you took it into other, what we call maybe the monuments that are from our lives and our youth, like the super, I think you mentioned the super duper.
Yeah. The super duper elephant. Yeah.
The super duper elephant. Yeah. But I loved that essay. I would recommend to anyone to look that up. I think they could probably find it on your website, I would assume.
Yeah, they can. Yeah.
And I guess the reason is because I had just talked about this book called The Last Children of Mill Creek, and it came to mind with that because she's losing in her memoir, she's losing her monuments, that this neighborhood that she so loved and that was raised for a highway to go out to the white suburbs. Mm. And yet 20,000 Black families lived there and were thriving there, although in standards of the white community, it was thought to be, you you know, a slum. And so this was urban renewal. But to read about her memories of it and her life there, it's a beautiful book. But your essay came to mind.
I loved writing that. And I love the super duper elephant, and I wish I knew where it was now. You know, I'm sure it's in some kind of sign graveyard of sorts, but
What is that? I have to interrupt and ask, just explain what the super duper elephant is.
It's an elephant that marked the top of the super duper grocery store sign. Super duper, the grocery store off James Road on the east side. It was like a neon.
Yeah, you write beautifully in it about how it sort of dims with the evening light, and how some of the letters didn't light up.
Oh, right. Yeah. Never. All the letters never lit up at once. You know, and I kind of miss that too. That sign, there's a photo of that sign that's the background of my website.
I'm curious to know, Hanif, when you began writing, not necessarily when you began publishing, but you began publishing when you were very young, because you're still very young. But when did you begin writing? And what motivated you?
You know, I was writing a lot in my early 20s on like a music blog I had, and in zines around town, like punk zines. And I mostly just wanted to talk about music. You know, mm-hmm. That's kind of it. I wanted to find other people who wanted to talk about songs. And that was kind of the way I knew how to do it, was by writing about songs to a small audience. And then that audience became a little less small, and I had to figure out how to keep making these connections through, you know, shared affections.
Did it get harder as you became more published and, frankly, more successful?
A bit, you know, but I think that it also becomes, for me at least, more rewarding when those connections can be made. You know, it might be harder to thread the needle, but when that needle gets threaded, it feels as though I've done some work that is a bit of an emotional achievement.
And another thing, the subtitle of this book, is Notes in Praise of Black Performance. When you say Black performance, what are you talking about?
Well, that's the thing. It's the whole project of the book for me was to broaden the idea of what Black performance is and can be, and to not just align it with movement, and also, or at least physical movement, and to also align it with emotional movements. Like there's that piece on fear, and also align it with the movements of romantics, you know, male affection or all of these kind of things. You know, a big part of the work was redefining what performance is and can be.
The male affection part was also very interesting. That might have been hard to write about, but it was very, very good to read. That was very, very, very enlightening to read that. I appreciated that very much.
Thank you.
Also, I should say that your website, give us the web address so people know.
Oh, yeah. It's just my last name, abdurraqib.com.
Okay. There's a lot. You're very generous on that website about what's available of your work to read there. So anybody interested, I would direct you to Hanif's website, but I would certainly direct you to his books, the latest one of which is about to be published, A Little Devil in America, Notes in Praise of Black Performance, by my guest Hanif Abdurraqib, whose career and growing up began in this area but is taking him all over the world, whether he's on Zoom or whether eventually he gets to go back on an airplane and actually go somewhere where people want him. He will be at the Columbus Metropolitan Library, or probably by Zoom. Is that right, Chris Hickey?
I'm guessing it will be virtual.
We don't know.
But I'm not sure. It's hard to tell what we'll be doing in June.
But that's on June 13th.
June 13th at 2:00. And I just want to make sure people know that even if you're not available at 2:00, our author visits are recorded. Depending on who the author is, it depends how long it will be available.
Okay.
So you, even if you aren't available then, you could watch a recording.
Thank you very much. I want to thank my guest today. Thank you, Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. Your blog is thelongestchapter.com. Thank you, Chris Hickey from the Whetstone branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library. Thank you to everybody at the library. Thank you, Hanif Abdurraqib. Your new book is A Little Devil in America. Go get it. Thank you, Hanif. Thank you all for being in the show today. Thank you to producer Aaron Esmott. Thank you to producer Matthew Rand. Thank you to Allside intern Bobby Gaberick. Thank you, Scott Good, who ran the board and made sure we were on the radio when we were supposed to be on the radio. And thank you all for listening. I'm Christopher Purdy for All Sides Weekend Books. Peace out.